You are listening to Covenant Dies Radio, helping you to stay safe and pure online. When Kaylin was 15 years old, her parents received an $800 cell phone bill. After some investigation, they discovered their daughter's secret. She had been secretly talking to a man 31 years older than her, a man who had been flirting with and sexually grooming her for 2 years. Today we talk with Kaylin and her mother, Lisa. Kaylin talks about the day her secret was revealed and how the relationship with this man had developed. Lisa also talks about the pain and confusion of the discovery.
And really, over those 2 years, I developed a secret relationship with this man that became very destructive to my life. And by the time anyone found out about it, 2 years had passed. And I, by the time I was 15, was completely brainwashed, confused, and had no clue what to do. No one knew what was going on.
She was in a mixture of anger and defiance and hurt and hysteria that was very, very confusing teenage scene, saying things that we didn't understand. I love him. He is my life. You can't take him away from me. He didn't do anything wrong. This is all my fault. It was just a basic nightmare to try to sort out what was going on.
As I had followed that emotional path through developing a very strong connection to this man in my soul, where I began to trust him more than my family, and so I believed what he was saying over what they were saying.
I did not understand psychologically how, even though my daughter, who was in all aspects a very mature, straight-A student, 15-year-old, I did not really understand she could be this sucked in to something this crazy.
Lisa and Kaylin also inform us about the warning signs of sexual predation parents need to be looking for in their own teens. Listen to their story today on Covenant Dies Radio. Well, Kaylin, let's go back to when you were 13 years old. You met someone at your church, and you didn't know it then, but that person would eventually play a huge role in the downward spiral of your early teenage years. What happened? What things materialized over those couple of years?
Well, you're right. Whenever I was 13 years old, a man and his family actually began attending my parents' church. This man was 3 times my age. So he was 31 years older than me, and he began to target me when I was around 13 years old through phone and internet contact. I knew him obviously from church, but he began to find private ways to get in touch with me. And really, over those 2 years, I developed a secret relationship with this man via cell phone chatting that became very destructive to my life. And by the time anyone found out about it, 2 years had passed. He was being very sexual in nature in the way he talked to me. However, I never got to the place of an actual physical relationship with him, but it began to completely erode the Christian foundation that I'd had in my life as a young person. And I, by the time I was 15, was completely brainwashed, confused, and had no clue what to do. No one knew what was going on.
Wow. So, Lisa, now, when did you finally find out about this? It was sometime in October. It was a couple years later, October 2002.
Right.
You found out about it. How did you find out about this secret life that was going on?
Well, in October of 2002, we received a cell phone bill for $800. At that
wow.
time, the only person in our household who had a cell phone was my husband. And so the bill came in the mail, and that, of course, sent great alarms through us, saying, well, how could this possibly be right? We really assumed it must be some sort of crazy billing error, but after analyzing the options, talking to the different kids, a chilling middle-of-the-night discovery that it truly was our daughter that had been involved with a man who did a lot of traveling with his business. He had given her calling cards and different kinds of communication means, and at the night that we discovered it, it was almost as if, right here in our bedroom, the daughter that we knew left our room, and one we had never seen before sat down in the chair right here in our room. She was in a mixture of anger and defiance and hurt and hysteria that was very, very confusing teenage scene, saying things that we didn't understand. I love him. He is my life. You can't take him away from me. He didn't do anything wrong. This is all my fault. It was just a basic nightmare to try to sort out what was going on.
So, in other words, Kaylin, you were groomed by this man over several years, over a couple of years.
Yes.
And but how did this progress over a couple of years? I mean, it started with what when you were 13, and how did it affect you emotionally all the way up to the point where the secret was discovered?
Whenever I was 13 and this was just beginning, this man was a family friend, and so he had trust within our family. He came over to our home. He was on our praise and worship team at our church, involved in the ministry that obviously was my family was involved with. And I remember him initially saying things and doing things that wouldn't have seemed that unusual. And so I didn't really think anything of his initial contact with me. You know, he would say, "You have a very pretty singing voice," or "You look very nice. That's a really pretty dress. You know, you're a very mature, beautiful young woman." That was kind of how his comments would start. He would kind of pay me special attention, I noticed. And really, honestly, it made me feel special as a teenage girl, wanting to feel like I'm something, like I'm beautiful. It didn't really catch me off guard at all, but you know, as months went on, that he would whisper in my ear, "I love you," you know, or he would whisper in my ear, you know, "Can I hug you?" And it progressed to where he was finding ways to hug me a lot when he was at church. And I would say it was maybe a year into the process that he began to IM me, instant message me on the internet. And he would ask me to be online so that he could chat with me. And it really, his chatting wasn't real, it wasn't sexual in nature, but it was definitely progressing, I would say. He would say, you know, "I'm just the
Yeah.
most beautiful girl he's ever seen," and he wishes he could run his fingers through my hair. And so nothing overtly sexual, but definitely beginning to cross a line that perhaps even if he'd started at that place, I may have recognized it, but I didn't at the time. He'd asked me to webcam with him, not anything sexual in nature, just he liked to watch me. I was so beautiful. Could I chat with him again? And so that was really how it progressed. For I would say most of the time, it was really just the last short period of time through a cell phone that he began to solicit me for sex and began to talk through very graphic things in sexual nature with me.
Obviously, you were saying that it had become this downward spiral in your life. Were there other things that were going on? There were other kind of negative things that were happening in your life at the time that were that your parents didn't know about?
Honestly, there weren't any. I had been a very honest girl. I had never kept anything from my parents, but it did affect me a great deal emotionally. I actually began to overachieve in settings that my parents would notice because I didn't want them to recognize that there was a problem, an underlying problem.
Okay,
And so
okay.
I was overachieving in school. I was being overly helpful around the house. I would chat and just spend lots of time talking and talking about everything possible except for this to my family, because I began to feel that guilt and that shame and that, "Oh no, I hope no one's going to find out what's going on," as I had followed that emotional path through developing a very strong connection to this man in my soul, to where I began to trust him more than my family, and so I believed what he was saying over what they were saying.
Okay. Well, you know, it's interesting. I want to take a moment here and read something because I thought it was interesting, especially as it parallels your own story. This comes from the Journal of Adolescent Health with a study that was done involving over 2,500 law enforcement agencies, specifically dealing with the issue of sexual predation. The study took place in 2001, 2002, so actually right around the same time that your own story was unfolding. The study actually was looking specifically at cases of sexual offenses against minors that started online. So while obviously one difference is yours didn't start online, but it definitely was accelerated through the use of the internet.
Yes.
The study concluded that 75% of the cases involved girls 13 to 15 years old, again, the same age you were when all this stuff started. 76% of the adult offenders were men older than 25, again, same as your story. 68% of the victims lived in dual parent homes, so they had both mom and dad at home, again, same as you. And half of the victims, when they were questioned by police, said that they were actually in love with their offender. And is this something you can identify with? This sense of an emotional attachment to this person that even though you may have in the back of your head thought this is not a good idea, or I wonder if this is okay, or this is progressing, this is uncomfortable. Did you feel like you were in love with this person?
I can definitely identify with that.
Yeah.
I honestly believe this man. He told me he was going to come and marry me. When I was 18, he was going to come and get me, and I was going to marry him. And I was completely believing that. I felt like I was in love with him, like there was no one else that I could ever love. Just all these very strong emotional feelings that were obviously very confused, but I certainly felt that way. And that's why I responded so strong when my parents found out, is it was really just the fact that they were going to take him away from me that made me flip out in such the way that I did.
Lisa, how did you guys progress in dealing with the situation? You know, how did you deal with the situation with this man at church? How did you deal with the situation in terms of, trying to prevent contact and all? You know, what did you do?
Well, I can tell you that first night where it came to light was not a pretty scene at all. My husband was immediately on the phone to the man, and from that moment on, he was never seen again at our church. We did not understand the full story for actually 9 months before we could get the whole story out of Kaylin. She became so sick at that point with a very deep depression mixed with a crazy form of rebellion that emotionally she just collapsed. We became her enemy. We were the ones that were taking away this man that she had to have. Now, the crazy thing is, even though you'd say, well, it seems pretty obvious, how come you couldn't sort this out? You know, I look back and I realized how much I did not understand about this issue of sexual abuse. I did not understand psychologically how, even though my daughter, who was in all aspects a very mature, straight-A student, 15-year-old, I did not really understand she could be this sucked in to something this crazy. And so we unfortunately did a lot of subtle blaming of her, I think, and did not give her the immediate help that someone who's making a sexual abuse disclosure should have. Unfortunately, that is incredibly common because the teenager is not where our stereotype mindset is. We kind of think, number one, you think about the issue of the stranger danger, that it's somebody you wouldn't know. Number two,
right,
the teenager who's sitting in front of you who can carry on a very adult-like conversation with all kinds of adult reasoning, how they could be so vulnerable emotionally to get tripped up like this is almost too much for the human mind to sort out on the spot. I really believe had I known what I know now, we would have handled the situation very differently. I think we would have seen it. I certainly would have had some controls and things in place that we would have, you know, we would have been able to have the content in front of us to see the grooming process. But, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. I believe
right.
The whole problem of that grooming situation is that, as I understand what law enforcement say, the person who's perpetrating, if it's known, a known person like ours was, grooms the whole situation to work for them. I had a very difficult time, even when I could see the facts in front of me, believing that this man who had been a personal family friend would do this. It just almost seemed inconceivable that he could do that. Now, of course, that's because he had earned our trust in a way that was not warranted. And so the effect in her life was just complete dysfunctional falling apart. If you tried to take her to a counselor, she would not report accurately to the counselor what had happened. And I'm very concerned about this issue because, honestly, as we've been out traveling and speaking to parents, this age range relationship has almost become a little trendy in our culture.
Right.
It appears you see it in Hollywood, you see it being played out in movies, you see it being played out online. And so the dynamics we lived through of how she attempted, as I look back on it, to age progress herself in those last, particularly the last couple of months where this thing got very intense. I remember going to my husband one day about 3 weeks before we discovered the secret and saying, doesn't it seem to you like Kaylin's aged about 5 years in the last month? You know, what do you think is going on? Honestly, that's a warning sign when a teenager makes those kinds of adjustments. I did not know that at the time. But see, she was attempting to make it all work in her mind. And then when it fell apart, her whole sense of the world fell apart with it. And I just talked with a mom just last week whose 18-year-old daughter had become entangled with a man who she had been working for as a babysitter in his late 30s. And she was hearing the same kind of thing, inability to sort through it, you know, a sense of, I have to have this man. If you take him away from him, well, what's behind all of that is this weird psychological, in this case it was a little older adolescent, but this grooming process that if you unravel that, their whole world unravels.
That was going to be my next question, really, is to, now that you guys have been on the receiving end of this trauma and have seen this thing up close, as well as traveling, you're speaking to other people, you're interacting with other people, you're interacting with this issue a lot, for the sake of any of the parents or the teens who are listening even right now, what signs should parents, should teachers, should pastors, should adults be looking for when it comes to the issue of secret sexual predation, when it comes to these statutory sex crime relationship, especially in light of, and I think this is interesting, especially in light of, Kaylin, your ability to try to hide it so well. You are trying to mask it through overachieving. Some kids don't do that. Some kids, you know, do other things. But how can you see this? How can you notice it when there's so much work done to try to hide it?
Well, I think it's very difficult. And when you look at the list of warning signs that we studied and my parents realized, well, I was displaying some of them, it's very broad. And so there can be a lot of different responses from teenager to teenager. For me, I was overachieving. But you see, a lot of teenagers will begin to underachieve under the pressure. I know that I was saying things and behaving in ways, like my mom said, that appeared that I was trying to be much older than what I was. I was saying things like, I just prefer to be around adults. I don't really like to hang around kids my age. They're too immature. So I was making clear statements that I was gravitating toward more, you know, more maturity. At the same time, that's not that unusual. You see some teens that just are more mature. They're not falling into the, kind of the teenage traps, but that was a warning sign for me, as well as just being very aware of the technology, I think, that your teenager is using.
Right.
I was finding, you know, excuses to stay home from family events. Really, I'm not sure what I was saying I was doing, but I was staying home so that I could spend time chatting with this man online, hours and hours, whenever no one was home, so no one would wonder what was going on. I was very sleepy during the day. I was taking a lot of naps because I was staying up at night to talk in the middle of the night on the phone to this man. So these were some of the things that I was portraying that I think my parents, you know, maybe dismissed in other ways because they didn't seem that unusual. What else would you add to that, Mom?
I'd say one of the biggest ones I remember going to are probably about 2 weeks is my best memory. And, of course, you know, when you're living through this kind of thing, I just wonder how many other signs I missed because I didn't notice them along the way.
Right.
But one that I remember confronting her, as it were, she was coming out of our garage, which now we can look back and say she was probably on the phone to the man, even moments before that. And I noticed that she had something about her that seemed to be more sexually provocative. Again, she had just a subtle change in her clothing. We'd not really had big clothing issues with her, but I remember saying to her that day, honey, what is up with this dress issue? And I remember as a mom saying, wow, I don't understand this change in what you'd almost say sexual vibes coming from her. Didn't make any sense to me. She didn't have a boyfriend. I wasn't seeing any other things. Now, taking all these things into a picture, here's where I think our biggest vulnerability point was. We did not believe it could happen to us. I just have to say that to parents. That keeps us very vulnerable as parents because we think that this kind of thing only happens to families who are not watching their kids, to families who don't care, to girls who are blatantly having all these other problems. And, you know, that can be true, that those can be more high-risk situations, but the statistics are so overwhelming right now in America. And the latest word, which no one knows exactly for sure, I'll just have to say, because teenagers underreport this, but the latest statistics I've seen say approximately 1 in 3 girls are sexually abused in some way by the age of 18. Now, that I did not know that in 2002. That is the kind of statistic that every parent in America needs to stare square in the face. if we think we're immune, we're silly. There's right, an right. awful lot of subtle things. And what can be abusive to a teenager, you see, thank God we got this stopped before this man had major physical contact with her. I truly underestimated the level of damage that could be there before any kind of overt sexual attack happened. But what we lived with was a multi-year recovery process. So when you see your teen start to head in to different kinds of other problems, like depression, rebellion, what we would call troubled teen issues, many experts say that underneath a lot of those teen challenges are actually sexual abuse wounds that they are struggling to deal with. And I have to tell you, as I've tried to be sensitive to kids that are around us with this issue, often it takes a lot to get the story out of kids, but you'll find we're dealing with the symptoms as adults when really we've got deep wounds on the inside. So as parents, even if we're dealing what we think is appropriately with other kinds of teen problems, always go back and dig back and say, is there something here I'm missing that might be causing this problem that needs to be addressed?
Sure. And obviously, combining that kind of awareness, combining that humility that says it could happen even to us, combined with that is, of course, using helpful technology as well. And I know that we talk to a lot of parents who are very grateful for the idea, knowing that they can monitor, for instance, where their children are going using a web browser, or knowing what programs are opened up on their computer, that they can mm-hmm. monitor those things.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. If we'd had Covenant Eyes assisting us in 2002, I don't believe we'd have a story today to talk about. Because mm-hmm. I think, number one, we were naive. Again, 2002, I think there was probably not as much talk about controls. We should have known better. I don't excuse that. We should have not been naive. But the fact is, we can talk about it a lot, but to take the action step to do something about it takes a lot of time and energy as a parent. It takes focus. It takes the ability to say, this is probably one of the most important jobs in this hostile culture that I'll ever do, which is to secure my children through what appears to be just a sexual mess all around us. Our main problem, though it had some computer element, our main problem was that cell phone.
Yeah.
And that's pretty low technology. This was not a smartphone. This was just your basic cell phone. But to a teenager, you see, that's a license into a secret world that they cannot handle. And so realizing, and, you know, Kaylin, what would you say to somebody about this issue of teenagers and technology in general?
Well, I just have such strong feelings because I saw the damage that these simple means of communication brought to my life. And so when parents ask me, I lean toward extreme caution, because I've just known too many teenagers who, like me, have slipped into a secret life that now is out of control and they can't get back from. And so I just feel so strong about supervision on the internet. Covenant Eyes is just an incredible resource that I think should be in every home. And I love how it limits not only where you go and then reports it, but even the time you can be on the internet. I just think that's so critical for all ages of children and adults. And then on the issue of cell phones, you know, my personal feeling is I just don't think that a teenager should have an independent cell phone until they have proven at around 17 maybe that they are capable. And then I think even then it should be under the control and the supervision of parents who can watch what's going on, because I've just known so many teenagers who have been able to isolate their life through a cell phone and now are living awful ruined lives because they were able to have contact with a man or a boyfriend or someone that now they've run away with. And it's just tragic to me. The amount of stories that are like ours, you know, or similar in some way or another. And so I just really encourage parents, if you're going to err on the side of caution for the sake of protecting your kids. Be a little overly careful. Not that you don't trust your kids, because you don't want to communicate to your teens that you don't trust them, but you want to recognize that they are not able to protect themselves from these forces that are coming at our culture and coming to destroy our kids and our teenagers. And it's the parents and the adults' responsibility to put those safeguards up.
I can say that, Luke, I can give parents this encouragement. Our daughter has come back and thanked us.
That's
for the
awesome.
No's that we said to her. And, you know, she's a little older. I understand. I still have a lot of teenagers in the house and some preteens. And it's tough when you're a teen parent and you're feeling like you're the, you know, the bad guy. You're the one that's saying no to these things. But I can say age and time will get a new perspective on it. Mm-hmm. And she now comes back and says, Mom, don't ever be afraid to tell those kids no, because I've lived there. I've been there. And though they may get upset for a moment, we're the adults, and we can see, hey, this kind of deception is even tricky for adults to recognize. And that's what law enforcement emphasized to us, that even good adults can be sneered into, you know, into very crazy belief systems. And so even more, we need to protect our kids.
You've been listening to our interview with Kaylin Waller and Lisa Cherry, authors of the book Kaylin's Secret, Every Parent's Battle to Save Their Children. You can learn more about their book and other resources for parents and teens at kaylinsecret.com. That's kaylinsecret.com. I am your host, Luke Gilkerson. For more of our podcasts, look for us on iTunes or visit the Covenant Dies blog, Breaking Free, at covenantdies.com/blog.
On that day, from sin we try to hide, when the blood on the ground ran from him as he died. In darkness, that stream found us, and our cursing.